Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston, and I just have to bring this up to start the show, if you don't mind. And it comes from our good Michigan progressive friends from Distill Social. The Michigan House this week voted on a bill that bans the creation of non-consensual AI or artificial intelligence porn, which also includes child porn. Now, the bill, as the Detroit News' Beth LeBlanc writes, would ban the creating, publishing, or distributing of deep fake social images without consent of the person the images are meant to represent, an issue brought to the public eye by manipulated images of singer Taylor Swift. LeBlanc says the issue of non-consensual deep fake pornography came to the forefront back in January when pornographic deep fake images of Swift began circulating online. So a handful of other states like Georgia, Minnesota, New York, and Texas have passed similar bills. I mean, it seems like a reasonable bill and a needed bill. And it received widespread bipartisan support in the State House by a 108-2 vote. So that's good. But wait. Who were the two votes against it, and how could they vote against it? Well, the two no votes, as reported by Distill Social, were right-wing MAGA nutjob Steve Cara of St. Joseph and Cass Counties, and Neil Frisk, who represents the Petoskey and Harbor Spring areas of northern Michigan and also the easternmost part of the UP, which includes St. Ignace Township. Now, I can't figure out exactly why MAGA Republican State Rep Steve Cara and Neil Frisk would vote against sensible bills like banning of AI porn, which includes child porn. But as Distill Social tweeted, weird flex, Steve and Neil. Should we check your browser history? Now, I can't wait to hear their reasoning. And if these guys are your state reps, you might want to give them a call and ask for an explanation. And I found this little nugget when it comes to pro non-consensual AI porn Neil Frisk, and it's from an interview he gave on WKHQ while running for the 107th House District in 2022. And listen to this answer that Frisk gave when it came to his stance on banning all abortion. Listen.
Yes, I am unequivocally pro-life. I am against any type of abortion. I would even, quite often the disclaimers put in there, the only exception would be to protect the life of the mother. But I'm actually was in the middle of filling out my right to life questionnaire this morning, and they ask, questions about that. And it was a yes or no answer, and I chose not to give a yes or no answer. My answer to that was, I would want to, again, I'm not a doctor, but I would want to absolutely make sure that, it would seem like in today's world of medicine, there would be a way to save the mother's life and save the baby's life. And so, I would be, I'm against abortion for any reason. And there's just so many options and opportunities out there that I think that, the unborn need to have someone to stand up for them, and I would be an advocate for that.
Yes, Neil Frisk is not a doctor, but he did stay at a Holiday Inn last night. Is that reference too old, or am I too old? Anyway, he just doesn't understand how it's impossible for doctors not to save both a woman and the fetus, because he doesn't understand, or he doesn't want to understand. Neil Frisk only cares about one thing, and that's punishing the woman, and in some cases, rewarding her rapist. And Frisk also joined in a lawsuit against voting rights proposals that Michiganders passed overwhelmingly in both 2018 and 2022. But yet, Mr. Christian nationalist Neil Frisk voted against banning non-consensual AI porn. I'm sure he's got a solid reason. Same for fellow MAGA Republican extremist Steve Kara, who calls himself a pro-Trump conservative, even though Kara suffered a major humiliation when Dear Leader endorsed Bill Huizenga over him for a congressional seat back in 2022. His idol picked someone else over him, but Steve Kara still loves his idol so much. I mean, he got humiliated, but yet he still loves Dear Leader. That's cultish behavior indeed. Kara also introduced a bill to keep the 1931 state abortion law, where a doctor performing an abortion would spend 10 years in jail. And Steve Kara wanted that law enforced after the Supreme Court got rid of Roe v. Wade. However, the Democratic majority in Lansing and Governor Gretchen Whitmer erased that 1931 zombie law from ever taking effect. But if Republicans got power, people like Steve Kara would have been pushing to punish doctors, thereby punishing women. Kara also, if you recalled, joined a bunch of House Republicans in wanting to censure Democratic House Speaker Joe Tate because Tate criticized right-wing MAGA nut State Representative Josh Shriver for sharing racist posts promoting the Great Replacement Theory that many of the right-wing really adhere to. I mean, that's a right-wing nut job theory in which they believe that people of color are trying to replace whites through immigration and interracial marriage. So I think we know where Steve Kara's heart lies. But he also opposed banning non-consensual AI porn. I don't know what kind of lessons Steve Kara is learning in his church, but I'm sure he'll let us know. But that's just part of the everyday saga that is the MAGA world. And these are the same people, by the way, who will sit there and tell you, yeah, Dear Leader Trump's got a point when he says it's a tough choice to make between getting devoured by a shark or getting electrocuted by an EV boat. I mean, many of his MAGA cult really believe that he made a great point. And I bet you it'll be a bumper sticker someday. Electrocution or shark attack. Vote Trump 2024. Of course, all gas-powered boats have batteries. And in Dear Leader's little scenario, if the boat sank, if an EV boat sank, wouldn't the shark get electrocuted too? I mean, I'm just thinking outside the box here. I mean, think about it. When Jaws attacked the Orca and the ship is going into the water with batteries and all, why didn't Quint and Chief Brody just die right there from electrocution? Or even more, why didn't the shark die from electrocution? And hey, while we're at it, why didn't Hooper die too? Because, I mean, he was in the water, hiding out in the rocks. Why didn't he die too? I mean, this is where we are today, everyone. And while we laugh and mock, there's still a significant portion of Americans who are ready to put these MAGA Republican extremists back into power. With the aid of the corporate press, many voters are made to believe that things are downright awful in this country when they're actually and empirically getting better. For example, I'm sure many of you heard the latest inflation report. Yes, the right-wing MAGA Republican nutballs are having a collective meltdown over the fact that the economy is, by metric standards, doing pretty well. And Democrats ought to be proudly pointing out, may I say, how once again it took a Democratic administration to pull us out of the economic doldrums left over by a MAGA Republican regime. From Reuters, and I quote, U.S. consumer prices were unexpectedly unchanged in May as cheaper gasoline and other goods offset higher costs for rental housing, but inflation remains too high for the Federal Reserve to start cutting interest rates before September. The report from the Labor Department on Wednesday also showed underlying inflation pressures abated significantly last month, with the cost of motor vehicle insurance declining on a monthly basis for the first time since the fourth quarter of 2021. The data also prompted financial markets to boost the probability that the U.S. Central Bank would cut its rates in September as well as in December. And there was Fed Chairman Jerome Powell stating that the Federal Reserve still won't reduce interest rates, even though that's one reason for our inflation. I mean, cutting rates is good for consumers, but the Fed just refuses to take the next obvious step. The Detroit Free Press reports right now, Mark Zandi, chief economist for Moody's, says that he'd expect the Fed to still cut rates in 2024, possibly a quarter point in September and another quarter point in December. If the Fed skips a rate cut in September, Zandi is expecting a rate cut to be announced in December after the Fed's scheduled two-day meeting. Wouldn't that be just convenient for the Fed to delay cutting the interest rate in December, a month after the election? Now, Mark Zandi did say on Twitter, and I'm quoting here, "Great inflation report. While this morning's consumer price inflation report for May probably overstates the disinflation case, it makes a strong case that inflation is headed back to the Fed's inflation target. All the trend lines look good. It's time for the Fed to cut rates." Damn right. It's time for the Fed to cut its rates. It's way past time, but the Fed, led by Republican Jerome Powell, just can't pull the trigger for some reason. I'm wondering why. Also, as I brought up here last week, you're seeing stores and restaurants begin to drop their prices since people stopped doing business at those places like Target or like McDonald's. Nobody wanted to pay for greedflation. Sure, inflation was likely to happen right after the pandemic and the supply chains were backed up, but companies continued to keep their prices jacked up after noticing that people would still pay higher prices for the same products. For example, Salon's Joy Saha reports how Costco took advantage of inflation by charging more despite inflation numbers cooling. Saha writes, "Costco Wholesale is the latest corporation being accused of rampant greedflation. A new analysis from Accountable US, a nonpartisan watchdog group, revealed that Costco reported consistently high profits and net incomes year over year, all while the company raised store prices and considered increasing its membership fees." I mean, this has been going on and on. And as the director of Accountable US said in that Salon story, there was no reason for it other than to earn as much as possible. In other words, greed. And I quote, "Over and over, we see big wholesalers and grocers unnecessarily squeeze American families, chasing record profits rather than stabilizing prices. It's time these companies answer President Biden's call to get their greed in check and bring prices down." Now, knowing all this and having all of this evidence of corporations earning massive and historic profits, the Fed must cut interest rates because that's helping keep things more expensive, despite the economic metrics showing otherwise. Now, we know had these numbers happened with Dear Leader Trump in office, MAGA would have been celebrating. They would have been having a huge party and saying that he saved the country. But he didn't. He didn't. And even more, all I've heard is Dear Leader Trump and Republicans attacking Biden on inflation, but you never ever hear them either describe solutions or describe when inflation is indeed over. Progressive podcaster David Pakman tweeted the following this week, and I quote, "For the people voting Trump because of Biden's inflation, can you account for one, why U.S. inflation post-pandemic is lowest among Western rich countries, and two, what Trump's plan is to lower inflation, and three, how low you want it since it's already at the economically desirable 3%. And I've shared it on Twitter, and I'll link to it on this week's episode page on Left of Lansing. But as you'll notice, not one MAGA cultist could provide David Pakman with a straight answer. Of course they couldn't, because they've got no solutions. And isn't it strange that Dear Leader never once criticized companies over their greedflation? Instead, Dear Leader's courting corporate CEOs so that they'll give him campaign cash in exchange for a further drop in corporate tax rates. Remember a few weeks ago when I talked about Dear Leader hosting all those big oil execs in Mar-a-Lago asking for $1 billion in exchange for not only giving them more big subsidies from American taxpayers, but also ripping up environmental protections that help save our environment, but give them more profits. And remember, despite all of these record corporate profits and how the Trump tax cuts for the rich donor class added some $1 to $2 trillion to the federal debt, listen to what MAGA Speaker of the House Mike Johnson says must be done.
The safety net programs, but the reality is they're headed towards bankruptcy. In just a few number of years, Social Security goes belly up. So does Medicare, Medicaid, all of these big spending programs, because we're drowning in debt. And so we've got to think about long-term reforms to those programs.
Yeah, Mike, we're in debt because of Trump trickle-down economics. But you see, Mike Johnson and his MAGA minions are saying hardworking Americans must sacrifice their Social Security and their Medicare to pay for tax cuts for the rich MAGA Republican donor base. Is that fair? I mean, that's what's at stake this November. Now, here in Michigan, Democrats have made some major strides in helping out to level the playing field for working class families, like increasing the state earned income tax credit, getting rid of the Republican retirement tax, erasing right to work for less because strong union representation lifts all boats, and also free lunch for public school kids, and so much more. However, despite all of this recent positive economic news and the policies that Michigan Democrats have passed here in the past year, there's still a long, long, long way to go towards helping our hardworking Michiganders. I mean, housing costs alone are something that must be addressed. Inflation and corporate greedflation continues to hurt so many people, which is why Michigan Democratic State Senator Erica Geis and Democratic State Representative Helena Scott introduced paid family leave bills last year, giving workers up to 15 weeks of paid leave, and it would be paid for through contributions from both employers and employees. I mean, this would help alleviate some of the pain that many new parents feel when caring for a newborn, and that seems like a pro-life stance to me, doesn't it to you? It would also help those who have to care for sick relatives, and it would help free up some extra spending money that people could use at their local businesses. I mean, it's a great idea and would further illustrate to voters how Michigan Democrats are fighting for them. I mean, we know MAGA Republicans don't care. Unfortunately, however, these bills have yet to receive a hearing. But it's up to us to push the Democratic majority to make paid family leave a priority. One of those groups pushing for passage of paid family leave is Mothering Justice, and its national executive director and founder, Danielle Atkinson, will join me here in just a moment to talk about the importance of getting paid family leave across the finish line this year. You're listening to LOL.
It's Michigan's premier progressive podcast, Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. If Pat's brand of progressive pontifications is getting you all riled up and you'd like to give him a piece of your mind, or if you'd like to tell him he's doing an outstanding job and to keep up the great work, just email him. That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Do you have stories you think Pat must know about or guest ideas for future episodes? That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Want to share your thoughts on how to grow Michigan's population or which flavor of Faygo Pop is the best? It's Rock and Rye, by the way. Just email Pat, leftoflansing@gmail.com. Now, here's Pat.
Leftoflansing@gmail.com is always the best way to reach me. If you'd like to talk about this week's show, or last month's show, or anything else, I'll even talk sports with you, including whether or not Caitlin Clark deserves to be on the women's Olympic basketball team, because it seems like, you know, every single American male in the country has an opinion on it. So why not me? No, I'm kidding. That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. As you've heard me say before the break, once the Democratic majority is finished getting the budget ready for Governor Whitmer to sign, they've got a perfect opportunity to continue to show how working families are of the utmost importance as we head into the election. And one way to illustrate that importance is for Michigan Democrats to pass a paid family leave bill, which was introduced last year by State Senator Erica Geis of Taylor and Representative Helena Scott of Detroit. Unfortunately, though, those bills have yet to receive even a committee hearing, and that has to change, not just for political reasons, but because it's just the right thing to do. Joining me once again to talk about this and some other issues is Danielle Atkinson. She is the National Executive Director and founder of Mothering Justice. Danielle, welcome back to the show. Thanks.
Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, I know we talked about Mothering Justice the last time you were on, but for those who may not have listened to our last talk, which I just simply don't understand, what is Mothering Justice all about and what kinds of work does it do for the people on a daily basis?
Yeah. So for the three people that didn't catch our previous interview, we work on issues of financial stability for moms and leadership development for mothers, particularly centering mothers of color and what they go through, because we know that when we lift their voices and speak to the issues that are disproportionately affecting them, then we are speaking about a larger group of people. We do voter engagement, leadership development, and then we have a mama's agenda that includes paid leave, maternal justice, childcare, and basic needs.
So it's just really helping giving some people a voice who really don't have the resources to have their voices heard, you know, like for major donors, let's say, for instance. It's hard for people, especially people who don't have the resources to get their voices heard in Lansing and in politics everywhere.
Exactly. Basic community organizing, right? We know that people power can defeat the political power and the power of special interest.
So you heard my intro there about those paid family leave bills that have been sitting around here in Lansing for the last year. Can you explain what's in these bills and why Mothering Justice is endorsing them?
Mothering Justice first started on our path to talking about paid leave about 12 years ago. We had mama conversations all over the state asking women in particular, but caregivers in general, what issues are affecting your own financial stability? And we heard a variety of things. Coming to the top of the list, childcare and then paid leave. I actually just left a play date with some kindergarten moms from the suburbs talking about how they left their job because they couldn't afford to take care of their children and then also earn money. So we went to the legislature originally, then Representative Rashida Tlaib, Senator Chang, so many wonderful champions over the year on this issue, both paid sick day and paid family medical leave. Paid sick day is what you take, you know, you wake up with a cold, your kid breaks an arm, and paid family medical leave is what you take advantage of or what you use when you get a cancer diagnosis, when a loved one passes away, for those long-term illnesses or welcoming the birth of a baby. That's what you would take. And so we passed paid sick days, the short-term benefit a few years ago, and we decided to move on to this much bigger social insurance program that would benefit people. And so for 12 years, we've been working on this issue. And right now we have such a great opportunity. We have one of the most progressive bills in the country that speak to how we live, how we care, and has a wide definition for family and bereavement as well, so that people can take off when someone passes in their family or be able to hold their hand as they're transitioning. And so we are hopeful, and we're working too. We're not just over here hoping and praying. We are working hard to get the legislature to take this up and pass it with this majority that is very slim and don't know how much longer we'll have it.
You brought up how you just talked with some working mothers. And, you know, I've heard many on the right claim that younger women should be having kids. But I look at it this way. How can you be asking women to have kids if there's really no support structure for working women, a majority of whom are part-time workers or who have low-wage jobs? I mean, and those jobs that don't offer a paid leave at all. So they can't say have more kids, and while we're at it, we'll gut some services and we also won't provide you with a basic economic safety net. I mean, that's not exactly what I would say a pro-family or even a pro-life stance.
Exactly. We talk about bonding with children, being there emotionally for children. Could you imagine not getting paid for 6 weeks? That is what they say, just healing from having a baby, let alone having time to bond with that baby, let alone having time to establish good breastfeeding practices. And there are people in this country, the majority in our state, don't have one day of paid leave. So they have to hope that they have enough in the bank. And we all know there's no one listening. And I would, you know, venture to guess that most people in our state do not have enough in savings to go without working for 6 weeks, let alone 3 months. And then imagine putting a 3-month-old in childcare. Some people, they want that, and that is fine. And we want to work on childcare as well. But some people don't want to leave their babies that early. And we need to be able to, in this day and age, with the resources that our country and state have, make a way for people to earn and to maintain a level of financial stability and also be able to stay home and care.
And it just seems like to me that if we're really all about retaining and attracting younger talent here to our state, which, you know, many policymakers are talking about, then, you know, this expanded paid leave is such an important step and a tool. I mean, this would help many, many young families who have a baby like you talked about, or who have to take care of an elderly family member, let's say. I mean, people are feeling squeezed and left behind in so many ways. And bills like this would really help families survive during those moments. And not just that, Danielle, but it would also free them up a little bit to have some extra money then to spend in their communities and that small businesses in their communities.
Look, we have the most amount of generations living at the same time than I think any other point in history, which means caregivers are caring for not only small ones. They're caring for elderly adults. And then throw in a cancer diagnosis, right? 1 in 8 people have a cancer diagnosis. So you are not only caring for others, but you're caring for yourself. And then not being able to do it, that means you're going to work while going through chemotherapy, while you're literally, and I don't mean to be crass, but I think it's important, still bleeding after giving birth to a baby. It behooves us as a state. And when you bring in the financial incentives and being competitive, we have other states with Democratic majorities passing this. And so if we want to compete with those states, not only for the economic feasibility of our state because people want to live here, but also just for being able to have a moral stance. We live in Michigan. This is the home of the labor movement. We have to be ahead of the curve when we're talking about workers' rights. And this is something that we've been talking about for years. President Obama, in one of his State of the Unions, he said that we're living under Mad Men policies in a modern family world, meaning our family dynamics have changed, what we're dealing with has changed, but the policies of our state and workplaces have not kept up.
Not at all. You know, you brought up something earlier when we were talking about these bills. You said something, and I wish I would have written it down, but I think you know where I'm going with it. You said something that it also expands like the definition of family or something like that. Can you explain that a little more?
Yeah. Well, happy Pride Month to everyone.
Yes.
So not only when we're talking about the LGBTQ community, we're talking about everyone who defines their family by love and not necessarily blood. And so when we're talking about who can come in and care for you or who can stay by your side or who is making sure you get to your chemotherapy appointments, it's not always someone who's related to you. And you're not necessarily related to the person that you give care to. And so we want an expanded definition of family to affirm the way that we love and care for each other so that I can care for my aunt and so that my husband's aunt by affection or friend can care for me. I remember my mother-in-law actually was caring for her sister-in-law, but it was her husband's brother's sister who didn't have any children and who found out she had cancer. And this would allow her to be able to care for someone she loves and who needs her and depends on her without having to face the financial difficulty of losing a paycheck.
Wow, that is a major portion of the bill, and it also makes it more inclusive as well. Danielle, there was, and I'm sure you know about it, there was this leaked Republican memo about these paid leave bills. And in part, it said, and I'm going to quote here, it said, Lansing Democrats want to take money out of your paychecks with a new tax to pay for summer break for adults. It's a ridiculous idea that people just cannot afford. What's your response to that kind of statement?
Okay, talk to any person who's given birth and tell me about these summer breaks and tell me about these vacations. Senator Manchin also, when we were talking about this on a federal level, was talking about didn't want to pay for people's vacations. We all know what it's like to be really, really sick or have someone who depends on us be really, really sick. And it's important that we affirm how communities operate and what really drives our state, not just our economy, but the functionality of our neighborhoods and communities. We need people to be able to take off. We need to be able to take off. And we need to also affirm that caring for yourself is important. Everyone gets sick, but unfortunately, not everybody has time to care. Rosalynn Carter, a huge fan of her, and when she passed, just went back into her work and her writings. And she talked a lot about caregiving. And she actually set up the Carter Institute for Caregivers. And she talks about how everyone is touched by a caregiver. There's no other person. You're either someone receiving care, you're going to receive care, or you're giving care. Those are the only type of people in the world. And so our policies, our public policies should be talking about this because this is a systemic problem and we have the ability to have a collective solution, which is policy that affirms that we all will need time to care for ourselves and loved ones.
A collective policy, because even more, I mean, the evidence shows that this would also help reduce racial disparities between those who have paid leave and those who don't, right?
Exactly. We know that people who make low wages are less likely to have workplace policies that help them care for themselves and others. 2/3 of low-wage workers do not have access to a single day of paid leave. And that is racialized. And it's also the gender dynamics are there too. So if we really care about equity, we need to have policies that even the playing field. A long time ago, I don't know if you remember Representative Erwin Oaks.
Oh, yeah.
She was a long, long time ago. I've been around for a while. I was talking to her about this, and she was telling me how when she was working in corrections, she had to take time all the way off. Like, she wasn't on the books when her child was born. And what that meant was it affected her Social Security. And so into retirement, she had less benefits and less money. And we know that women are more likely to take time off when they have a kid or they have to care for somebody. They take time out of the workforce, which affects their long-term stability, and they're more likely to be in poverty when they're elderly. And again, we know that's racialized too. So we have to be thinking, when we're thinking about equity, when we're thinking about reproductive justice, honestly, we have to be thinking about how caregivers are living and the problems that they are dealing with. And at the top of the list is the ability to take off without the financial burden of losing a paycheck.
Which is why reproductive rights are always bottom line economic rights too. It is
exactly,
an economic issue. You know,
yes.
I know you saw this probably, but a new poll released by Mitchell Research Communications showed that 63% of the respondents in that poll either strongly support or at least somewhat support a paid family and medical leave bill. So the numbers are on your side, which is why I would say this would be a slam dunk for the Democratic majority to pass it now. I mean, it just seems like a no-brainer, both politically, but more importantly, though, not just the politics of it, just it's the morally right thing to do.
Yes, this is bipartisan. We know that everyone gets sick, whether you are a Republican or a Democrat. You know, I just encourage our elected officials to get out of the dome and get into their communities and ask, is this important to you? And I have full faith that the answer is going to be a resounding yes, an exasperated yes, a tired yes, because people have been trying to make it on their own for so long. It's time for our elected officials to step up to bat and help us out.
You know, while I have you here, I just want to just get your take on this, because we're waiting on a decision from the Michigan Supreme Court on the right of the legislature to do this thing called adopt and amend. And it's something that they utilize for both a paid sick leave and minimum wage increase back a few years ago. This is back in 2018 when Republicans had the majority. And what they did was they adopted both measures, a paid sick leave measure and a minimum wage increase measure, that were supposed to go to the voters. They were supposed to be on the ballot in 2018. And then here's the thing. These MAGA Republicans then watered down the language of the original intent of, let's say, the paid sick leave law. The original intent meaning where a worker would earn 72 hours of paid sick leave, and that was whittled down to just 40 hours. And the MAGA Republican law would only pertain to those businesses with 50 or more workers, compared to the petition's original intent, which was a number of 6 workers. And let me remind everyone that Rick Snyder signed those watered down bills into law. And let me remind all the listeners too that the supposed moderate nerd Rick Snyder is raising money to put MAGA Republicans back in the majority of the legislature. I just want to make sure everybody knows that. Now, Danielle, that move, though, illustrates why I think so many people get frustrated and get so flustered with politics. And it's why there's so much cynicism, I think, with voters, that politicians are not really working for them, that they're working for other interests. And that's why I'm hoping that the state Supreme Court realizes this and will rule that adopt and amend is unconstitutional. What's your take?
Yeah, I 100% agree. You know, I try to explain this to folks in less Lansing insidery terms. I say, okay, I've got 6 kids. What if I said, my husband and I get together and we say, listen, we've got 6 Oreos. You guys vote on whether or not you want these 6 Oreos. And if you vote yes, everybody gets one. If you vote no, you don't get one. And they're like, yeah. So my kids vote overwhelmingly. 5 out of 6 say they want an Oreo. And I say, okay, my husband and I get back. We're like, okay, listen, they said they wanted it, but what if we only give 3 of them Oreos and then we cut them in half? That is what the legislature did. They literally said, hey, we've got this tool of direct democracy. You go ahead and use it. And then, oh, actually, we're going to change it up. How is anybody supposed to have trust in that kind of system? And I can't say that that wasn't the intent, for them to undermine democracy and have people be disappointed in our system and opt out in the future. I can't say that that wasn't the Republican intent, but I have full faith, and I'm really, really, I have full faith in the Supreme Court that they will restore democracy, restore people's trust in it, for not only Michiganders, but everyone in the country, because eyes are on Michigan. if this works, if this kind of underhanded trick can work in Michigan, then what prevents another state from doing it? What prevents another Republican legislature from undermining the direct democracy that we have with a ballot initiative? And so it's really important. We are all waiting just patiently because we don't want summer to go by and not really enjoy it because we're waiting on a Supreme Court decision. But we are hopeful that before the summer is over, that we will get a ruling in our favor and that we will restore the language of the original paid leave ballot initiative here in Michigan.
And they did that, of course, because, again, they knew, A, it would pass, and B, I think they know by looking at the evidence, it would work. I think that's exactly. Those are some of them right there. Danielle, if there are people who really want to get engaged with this effort and want to get on the state legislature and get on their own legislators in doing the right thing and passing this bill this year, what would you say is the best way to go about it?
Call them, please call your senator, call your representative, tell them that we need paid leave. We need people to act with the urgency and the veracity that they did with our reproductive justice for all language and ideas. Obviously, it was a different method and we were doing a ballot initiative, but this is about lives as well. Just like when we voted and we came out and we volunteered and we raised our voices to restore women's reproductive freedoms, we need to do that with paid leave. We have to understand that maybe this doesn't mean life or death for you, but it does mean life or death for someone else. And we need to have this as a value in our state and make it very clear that when we act on behalf of working families in Michigan, not only do working families win, but our entire state is lifted.
And while I still have you here real quick, anything else on the horizon for Mothering Justice during the next few months?
Yeah, so we are going to do quite a few things. Obviously, it's election season is coming up, so we've got lots of things planned. Go to our website because we have events. We have Ballot Bash where we celebrate the influencers in our community, the people that are always getting the vote out. We want to give you your flowers and say thank you to you. Also, we have a Momivist program, which is our fellowship. It's our relational organizing fellowship. And really, it's just a system that we help you and prepare you for talking to your friends and neighbors about this upcoming election cycle. And then if you are a candidate running for office, also go to our website. We are Mothering Justice Action Fund. Our sister organization is doing endorsements of pro-care candidates. And so we would love to endorse you if this is something that you're really passionate about. We want to get you in office. We want to support your campaign. As a C4, we will be endorsing candidates because we think it's really important that we are amplifying to our membership who cares about care.
And you mentioned the website?
Motheringjustice.org.
All right. Danielle Atkinson, National Executive Director and founder of Mothering Justice. I'll make sure to also provide a link to your website as well on leftoflansing.com and where people are listening to their podcast. So listen, I am so grateful for your time. I know that you're very busy, but thanks for sharing your thoughts and your endless work at Mothering Justice, everything that you're doing there. You're good people, Danielle, and we need more like you on the front lines giving voice to the voiceless. Thank you so much. And it was nice talking with you again. And hey, let's do this again soon.
Let's do it again soon. Thank you so much, Pat.
He spent nearly 25 years working as a liberal voice in conservative talk radio across the state, and he's still a somewhat stable person. It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. You can find archives of the podcast, plus Pat's musings on other topics in written form at leftoflansing.com. Left of Lansing archives are available wherever you get your podcasts. And now Left of Lansing is available on YouTube. We'd like to thank Audio Boom for distributing all our episodes so we can share progressive, otherwise known as common sense, values across Michigan and the country. Now, here's Pat Johnston.
I always love having Danielle Atkinson on the show because she and her fellow hard workers there at Mothering Justice are fighting to even the playing field for working families throughout the state by pressing for common sense or, as we say here, strong progressive sense policies. Please contact your local state representative and state senator and tell them to get cracking on these paid family leave bills now, not later, and don't wait until after the election, either. Democrats, please, if Democrats truly care about keeping their majority, passing paid family leave is a beautiful opportunity to do so. And it puts MAGA Republicans on the defensive as to why they don't care about parents being there for their newborn babies or why they don't care about people tending to their elderly family members. I mean, this just seems like a slam dunk to me. A no-brainer, if you shall. Time now for the Left of Lansing Last Call. This is something I've been wanting to bring up here for the last month or so. Dr. Sherry O'Donnell is running in the Republican primary for Michigan's U.S. Senate race. Now, Dear Leader Trump has already endorsed Florida Mike Rogers, but O'Donnell is staying in the race, arguing that she's more MAGA than Florida Mike. And like many MAGA Republican Christian nationalists, Dr. O'Donnell believes she can somehow bob and weave when pressed on whether or not she wants to pass a nationwide abortion ban. Listen to this part from WKAR's Off the Record when O'Donnell was pressed by Michigan Public Radio's Zoe Clark on whether or not O'Donnell would vote for a nationwide abortion ban. Listen.
Would you vote for a national abortion ban?
That is a state issue as far as the...
It could certainly become a federal issue and a vote in the U.S. Senate.
So that would be reversing Roe versus Wade. I think we made some significant improvement when we overturned Roe versus Wade.
So you would not vote for a national abortion ban?
I would not. That is a state issue.
It could be, it could come up in the U.S. Senate.
So
a ban on abortion in the United States. Would you vote for that?
We need to take that into consideration where it is a state-regulated issue. If we went back to a national ban, we're never going to have a national ban. We're never going to have a national ban. So do I think that we need to continue to work towards pro-life? Absolutely. I am pro-life.
Hey, give Ms. Clark credit for the question, and you could just hear Sherry O'Donnell trying her best to avoid answering the question. But then the show's host, Tim Skubick, kept the pressure on O'Donnell to answer the question. And, well, just listen.
So I would vote for a national...
Why didn't you complete the sentence?
So I am unabashedly pro-life.
Well, I understand that. But you almost said I would vote for it, and then you stopped.
So you're asking if I would vote for a national ban on abortion?
I believe that was her question.
Okay. I would have to say yes, I would have to vote for a national ban on abortion.
And hey, give credit where credit's due, Mr. Skubick. Good job on pressing O'Donnell to answer the question. So there you have it. And that's what MAGA Republicans will do if they control the United States House, the Senate, and the White House. They want a nationwide abortion ban. Make no mistake. And MAGA understands that their nutty extremist views on abortion isn't flying with voters. And it's why they try to dance around the issue. Meanwhile, polling firm Navigator Research this week showed that 61% of respondents said they would not back a candidate that supports a nationwide abortion ban. 72% said they would not support a candidate who wants to ban contraception. And 64% said they'd oppose anyone trying to ban IVF. And that's why, as Ms. Atkinson and I said, reproductive issues are economic issues for women. But abortion and reproductive rights are also about freedom. Freedom that MAGA Republicans like Sherry O'Donnell and Florida Mike Rogers are all about shredding to pieces.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan, it's Pat Johnston.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Left of Lansing. Thanks again to Mothering Justices Danielle Atkinson for being on this week. Next week, Democratic State Representative Jason Morgan from Ann Arbor will join me to discuss some major bills that could finally boost some much-needed cash into transit and in other areas like housing while cutting back on some of the corporate subsidies we've been doing here in the state. That's all coming up next week. Everyone, have a great weekend. Happy Father's Day to everyone, and especially my dad. And hey, stay cool out there. It's going to be a hot one throughout most of the state this next week, and it's not even officially summer yet. Oh no. Until next time, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.